Ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Harold Holt.
Senator Henty and Mrs. Henty, Dr. Siemens and Mrs. Siemens, Mr. Buckley, many other distinguished guests here today, and ladies and gentlemen, and all associated with this great project. It's a personal pleasure to me, for a variety of reasons, to be here at this time, if for no other reason than because, like you, I'm enjoying this bracing Canberra air and this beautiful Australian setting. At least, Dr. Siemens, you'll be able to report that Australia does live up to its travel brochures as to its sunshine and the beauty of its quite unique fauna and geography as we see it around us. It's not a very frequent occasion, of course, for a Prime Minister to be addressing himself to a matter of this kind. I've done so very rarely. Prime Ministers, if they are to succeed, are not so much concerned with outer space as keeping their feet firmly on the ground. Sometimes their opponents accuse them of being up in the air. Even their most fervent admirers are not known to say that they're out of this world. So I come before you as one who addresses you with all the valour of ignorance about this rather esoteric area of human activity, which is exemplified for us in this quite awesome a piece of equipment under which some of us at least are sheltering here this morning. But it is a notable occasion in a chain of events which have had considerable significance for Australia and which we hope is enabling Australia to play a useful and helpful part, not only in the space program of the United States itself, but in what has become one of the happier ventures of mankind, in which politics tends to be submerged and the aspirations of mankind, the achievements of science, can be largely shared throughout the world. This particular tracking station, so auspiciously situated and so happily named, I think Honeysuckle Tracking Station is a delightful name for an institution such as this. It would be attractive in relation to almost any activity. If you were to come here, Dr. Siemens, and say you were tracking square at Honeysuckle Creek, there might be a different interpretation placed on your activities by the Australians who would be familiar with that vernacular. But here we have a new tracking station which is to play its own useful part in a great human adventure. And this adventure into space is something which an older generation such as my own can scarcely comprehend. It's the stuff of science fiction, of space fiction, of earlier times made reality in our own day and generation. And as we reflect on these things, it's fitting that we should give due tribute and regard to those pioneers in science down through the centuries who have made possible by their earlier adventures of the human mind and body and by the achievement of these pioneers of genius. They, by their efforts, have given us the kind of instruments and the scientific method of experiment which makes this sort of achievement possible. I mentioned at the outset that it was a happy circumstance that those great powers who have interested themselves in this particular area of human achievement have approached their tasks with the objective of bettering mankind's knowledge of its environment and of contributing to peaceful purposes and to an improvement of man's standards of living. And this vital aspiration is certainly shared by the two great powers, the United States of America and the Soviet Union. And with amazing technical achievements to be put at disposal of man's efforts to shape his world towards meeting his material needs and opening new doors to his understanding himself and the universe in which he lives, we owe much to these two great countries. The United States National Aeronautics and Space Act became law on the 29th of July, 1958. Less than 10 years ago, and it was then stated officially as United States policy in that legislation that activities in space should be devoted to peaceful purposes for the benefit of mankind. In a modest way, Australia had commenced cooperative activity in the International Geophysical Year, 1957, by operating a tracking system known as Mini-Track at Woomera. And now we have, from that beginning, added Carnarvon in Western Australia, Cooby Creek in Queensland, Woomera in South Australia, Tidbinbilla, Oral Valley, and now Honeysuckle Creek, all of these last three in the Australian Capital Territory. The United States has financed the cost of construction, and by the end of the year, the Space Authority will have spent more than $100 million in Australia. You're used to juggling figures in billions, Dr. Siemens, but for Australia, this is a considerable sum to be spent inside the borders of our continent for these scientific purposes. The cost of operating the six Australian stations currently is about $8.5 million a year. There is an appropriateness, I think, that Australia should be in the picture in this particular field, because Captain Cook's own voyage of exploration, which led to the settlement of Australia, was made on behalf of the Royal Society to observe a transit of Venus across the Sun almost 200 years ago. And so we feel that we are appropriately placed to be playing a part now in another great exploration, that of space. We've been associated with the United States program since its early days, as the illustration I gave earlier would suggest. And for nearly 10 years now, we've joined in facilitating American space activities. We've helped to select sites and construct stations in Australia, and their manning includes scientists and technologists from the Department of Supply and Australian Industry, altogether some 700 persons from these sources. The Australian government purchased and made available to the Space Authority 900 acres of freehold land for this present station, a practical contribution to the space program itself. This station is directly concerned with Project Apollo, which will launch into space three-man capsules as part of a program of experiments, which will culminate in a voyage of some 3 days' duration to the moon, 250,000 miles away. The Australian group of stations represent the largest complex of Space Authority stations outside the United States. And I think I'm correct in saying, Dr. Siemens, that in the Apollo project, there will be three tracking stations which will be following the course of the moon vehicle beyond the 10,000 mile limit. One in the United States, one in Spain, and this one here in Australia. And I think we can feel gratified and take some pride and indeed satisfaction that on what will prove to be one of the great historic events of man's exploration of his universe, we shall be one of the three countries right in the picture, literally, so far as the concluding phases of the flight are concerned. Some people wonder whether all this vast expenditure that goes into the space programs can be justified. And the answers are not difficult to find. Already we have been deriving great benefits from the program of space adventure. If you take meteorology, that's an easy one. I don't know why I'm fumbling with that. There's not a human being on Earth who isn't daily concerned with the state of the weather. It's our most familiar personal greeting when we see each other in the course of the day. The weather can now be viewed on a global scale several times a day. This can be done regularly in regions of the Earth which have previously defied around-the-clock meteorological observation. The poles, the oceans, the sparse areas of the southern hemisphere have now been brought into the range of weather forecasting. And this also has an aspect which would commend itself to all of us in enabling us to avoid the worst effects and havoc of hurricanes, cyclones, and typhoons. For example, in 1961, quite early in the program, people were evacuated from the path of Hurricane Carla as a result of warning data received from the Tyros, a satellite. In navigation, satellites can play a helpful role today. In international communication, we've already achieved the first telecast between Britain and Australia. We are but at the beginnings of this improvement in communication, and before we're all very much older, the world can be in television contact as a normal and everyday event. There has been a notable contribution to the knowledge of geography, our study of geology. Our understanding is assisted by the information we receive from a special satellites designed and equipped for these purposes. Man's superior ability to explore and record details will provide valuable information as to measurements. Direct photographs, soil and rock samples, a vast array, in short, of scientific data. The initial landing on the moon, proposed by 1970, may lead to longer journeys and wider exploration and culminate in the establishment of a permanent moon base, a project which a few years ago would have been thought quite fanciful, even if it were to appear in the realm of fiction. There have been other benefits already directly attributable to the space exploration effort. Great advances in materials such as ceramics, metals and plastics. Metal alloys specially developed have led to improvements. For example, they've been found ideal for the manufacture of artificial parts for the human body. For such necessary assistance to hip and elbow joints. Special knowledge of foods developed for astronauts may help the world in its search for the solution of food problems. And for Australia, we have a growing number of men and women technically trained to handle complicated concepts and the complicated equipment associated with space technology. Australia has found already many benefits to its own technological development. And it may interest you to know that last month, Qantas, with the cooperation of the tracking station at Kubi Creek experimented in air-to-ground voice communication by satellite with encouraging results. Mankind needs the incentive of space exploration in order to develop to full potential some of these great possibilities. And this vast spurt of human imagination and technological progress is opening new doors to experience and achievement. It carries with it, of course, its own hazards. Fortunately, disasters have been few, but we should all remember here today the sacrifice made by Grissom, White, and Chaffee as they were playing their part in this scientific evolution. We welcomed here, some of us in this gathering, I've no doubt will recall with great pleasure, Walter Shearer and Frank Borman and their wives. And we pay tribute to the courage, the skill, and determination of these brave pioneers of tomorrow who make it possible for us to realize the aspirations of this great venture. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, may I refer to this as another welcome illustration of the friendly and mutually helpful teamwork which over the years, and more particularly over recent years, has been demonstrated between the United States of America, our great ally, and our own country of Australia. This stands as a symbol to that friendship and to that teamwork and an alliance which we hope will endure for as long as our two countries remain national entities. And so, as I open formally this tracking station and have with you a vision of what it can contribute to this program in the future, may I adopt the words of Tennyson as a fitting conclusion. Forward, forward, let us range. Let the great world spin forever down the ringing grooves of change. I declare the station formally open.